Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
I would like to thank you all for being here. I'll try to be as quick as possible and express my gratitude in particular to Professors Apostolos Athanasakis and Voulatsouna for their warm support and hospitality. My presentation proposes a reassessment of two top figures of Greek contemporary architecture and town planning, whose holistic approaches transcended the placelessness and anti-traditionalist principles of modernism. They are Konstantinos Doxiadis, the world-famous town planner and father of acoustics theory, and architect Aris Konstantinidis, the master philosopher whose work in post-war Greece reconciled modernity and tradition. Despite the significant differences of these two men in terms of origin, personality, education, talent, abilities, career, and scale of work, they also had some things in common. My presentation will focus on those aspects of the two men's work that confirm the following view of Greek painter and poet Nikos Engonopoulos. The years, in my view, teach us that the greater the local character of an art and craft, the more global is its interest, that the more personal it is, the greater its universal significance, and the more of its own time it is, the more eternal its content. The two men worked chiefly during the Cold War period, when Greece was attached to the chariot of the Western Bloc, headed by the United States. International military alliance systems, political and economic unions of the Cold War period are illustrated here. Greece is here. And this is the alliance system, the Western alliance system, and Greece is somewhere here. The two men lived and worked in one of the most turbulent periods of Greek history. As adolescents, they were shaken by the tragedy of 1,005,000 Greek refugees arriving from Asia Minor in Greece, which was at the time a small country of only 5 million people, exhausted by successive wars, the two Balkan Wars, World War I, and the Asia Minor campaign. They reached manhood and started their career at the time of the Metaxas dictatorship, fought in the victorious defensive war against Italian fascism, went through the hardships of the German-Italian occupation, the resistance, and the tragedy of the Greek Civil War, produced the most important work in the 50s and 60s, and finally went through the seven-year dictatorship of the colonists in Greece. And now a few words about some things that Doxiadis and Konstantinidis had in common. Besides their year of birth, they had a strong character built by experience and hardships, studies in Germany, a holistic and unconventional approach to the work, personal experience of living and working abroad, profound understanding of refugees and their problems, a critical stance toward utopian and monumental architecture, the need to base their actions on principles, a reluctance to be fashion-driven, and both were more honored abroad than in the homeland. Doxiadis was a top figure in the international planning field. There may be no other urban planner of his generation whose work has influenced the life of so many people and the future of so many societies. I would like to start with some of his main traits, which hold a key to understanding his approach and work. Konstantinos Doxiadis was rational, optimist, and humanist, sharp-witted, capable of abstract thinking, and of taking full advantage of other people's ideas and theories, especially those who were architects and working in the planning fields. He was creatively influenced by architects Le Corbusier, Nikolai Landowski, John Keynes' theory promoting a mixed economy, the global perspective of historian Arnold Toynbee, the communication theory of Marshall McLuhan, the United States megalopolis phenomenon as observed by human geographer Jean Gottman, Margaret Mead's systems approach to cultural anthropology and Buckminster Fuller's inventive ideas and global environmental concerns, among others. He was social and self-confident, and although an architect of limited ability, he managed to create for himself an exceptional role on the Greek and world stage of urban planning. He had an extraordinary ability to respond to challenge and change, an uncommon political flair, passion for effective action, research, and large-scale problem-solving. He was an inspired leader with communicational skills and a high-pressure manager of gifted subordinates. He made a fertile use of Greek antiquity in urban planning projects, and his favorite motto was the maxim of the sophist Protagoras, "Man is the measure of all things." Doxiadis cultivated the company of celebrities. He had substantial contacts in the international political, economic, and intellectual community. Through his work, through the Delos Symposia, organized every July from 1963 on, and through the research programs of the Athens Technological Institute, established by his office in 1958. Here we see him in the Delos Ancient Greek Theater addressing his guests. Buckminster Fuller signing the Delos Declaration. D, I shall call him D for, with Margaret Mead in 1964. A study by Arnold Toynbee by the addressing the Hellenic city-state. It was a very important research program. And here we see Jean Goodman. Konstantinos Doxiadis was born in 1913 in Stenimachos. He was a Greek of the diaspora, which was in eastern Romelia, today Bulgaria, of an upper middle class family. That is his family house, mansion. His father, Apostolos, was a physician, liberal politician, and government minister with a broad spectrum of activities. Apostolos Doxiadis, being a refugee himself, was the leading figure in the successful housing programs for the Asia Minor refugees in the 1920s. We see here the refugees near the Theseon Temple, and that's what happened after the first settlements were finished. He was then a minister of social works, Apostolos Doxiadis. You see him, this is this impressive person here, with King George, with Prime Minister Venizelos, father, the mother, and Konstantinos. The career of Konstantinos Doxiadis was of epic dimensions. He lost his mother at the age of 9, and he reached manhood under the strong influence of his father. His career was of epic dimensions. He studied architecture at the National Technical University of Athens from 31 to 35. There he acquired an important teacher and mentor, Dimitris Pikionis, who approached the modern movement in a critical manner. That's Pikionis. Another major influence during his student years was Le Corbusier, the fourth SIAM, which the International Congress of Modern Architecture, which addressed the theme of the functional city and produced the groundbreaking Charter of Athens, and the systematic approach of ancient Greek architecture by French historian Auguste Choisy. He was also very fond of theater, and he carried on. He designed several set and costumes designs for performances, theater performances. In 1936, a year after he graduated, he was awarded a PhD from the Technical University of Charlottenburg in Berlin for his controversial dissertation, Raumordnung im griechischen Städtebau, the disposition of space in Greek city planning. This was an original theory through which Doxiadis tried to provide a logical explanation for the urban complexes of ancient Greece. He argued that apart from the system of hippodamus, with his harmonious straight lines, and the ancient Greeks had also a system of polar coordinates that were used in the planning of the monumental building complexes. According to Doxiadis, the location of significant buildings in a grouping was not random. It was done in such a way that the beholder could see three of its corners from the critical point of access to the complex. Here. This theory, which was supported by Pikionis, was condemned by the country's academics and especially by Panagiotis Michelis. Nevertheless, the controversy surrounding Doxiadis' dissertation would make him known and in demand. He would give lots of lectures on his doctoral thesis, which led to his election as an associate member of Berlin Academy of Town Planning in August 1937 at the age of 24, which is something very, very rare at the time. In 1937, he was called upon the Greek government to head the town planning authority of Greater Athens region. 2 years later, he was placed at the head of the Office of Town Planning Studies of the Ministry of Transport, a post that he held until 1945. During the Nazi occupation of Greece, he took part in the resistance as head of a team named Hephaestus, having gathered around him all the notable architects and engineers which were jobless at the time. He assigned them to record the damages done in Greece by means of maps, charts, and photographs. Here we see him with his wife Emma, who was a very good friend and supporter throughout his life. From 1945 to 1951, he played a leading role in the reconstruction of Greece as junior minister of the Ministries of Reconstruction and Coordination. In 1945, he participated in the charter session of the United Nations Organization, which took place in San Francisco. He was very effective in making known the sacrifices of his country to the Allies, fight against fascism and Nazism, and this became the key to arranging aid under the Marshall Plan. Here we see him with an exhibition he had arranged, which was that was a touring exhibition, and here we see him at San Francisco with the Greek delegation. From this public positions, Doxiadis argued that priority should have been given to rebuilding the countryside and only afterwards to Athens. But this strategy was unfortunately reversed by Athenian vested interests, with the well-known results, the decline of the provinces and the inordinate growth of the capital. This enormous effort on Doxiadis' part and the relentless war waged against him ruined his health. Fired and embittered, he left for Australia. 2 years later, he returned to Athens, which would become the launching pad for the most important phase of his career, the international one. The Australian interval had given Doxiadis a chance to regroup his forces and charter new paths. Doxiadis' theory of acoustics was a systematic and global approach to human settlements, well-rooted in its time. It was in line with functionalism, structuralism, systems approach, the Team 10 approach, etc., but it was also sensitive to context and tradition. Acoustics deals with all the scales of inhabited space, from the room and dwelling to the urban region and to the world urban network, the Ecumenopolis, as he called it. Its scope begins as a descriptive science searching for the laws which govern the human settlements, goes on to theory, policy making, programming, technology, and ends with art. Doxiadis presented his theory of acoustics in a monograph, a critical explanation of which would require more than one lecture or conference. I will therefore give you just a hint of some of its central ideas. Doxiadis held the view that spatio-temporal relations and man's movement in space are the major components in the understanding and planning of human settlements. In this respect, he appears as a pioneer in analyzing social networks. Doxiadis addressed the topic of the rapidly changing urban settlements by his theoretical concept of four scales of ideal dynamic cities, which he called Dynapolis, Dynametropolis, Dynamegalopolis, and Ecumenopolis. He also maintained that the practical goal of acoustics is to assist man in being happy and safe within his settlements. He therefore held the view that contemporary cities should have districts of a more stable character and human scale, conceived as modern interpretations of the communities or neighborhoods of the past. So Doxiadis found that the ideal form and size of urban districts was a square of about 2,000 by 2,000 meters, which allows its inhabitants to reach the center without walking more than 10 minutes. Doxiadis opposed the static and aesthetic approaches to architectural discourse. He argued that the star architect of the past should step down from his ivory tower and assume a new, less central role in interdisciplinary teams of experts who aim at creating the best possible balance between man, his habitat, and nature in a continuously changing environment. This balance could be achieved through what he called the architecture of entopia, which was something like contextual architecture, which was not a static system of material objects, but a changing service and living area grounded on information. The criteria needed for such a dynamic or entopian architecture can be derived, according to him, from the use of a diagram that he called a acoustic grid. According to his schematic representation, settlements always draw on at least five elements: nature, that's his acoustic grid here, nature, man, society, shells, and networks. Each of those elements corresponds to the five types of problems: economic, social, political, technological, and cultural, that should be studied by experts in the relevant disciplines. Doxiadis adopted a top-down approach to human settlements that makes all scales subservient to the larger scale. Thus, social and economic geography became the main source of urban planning and architecture. Architecture's subordinate position in the hierarchical theory of acoustics marginalized its role and led to boring uniformity of solutions. Doxiadis' interdisciplinary and holistic approach alludes to the rational optimism of the Enlightenment and to Hegel's organic conception of human societies as entities greater than the individuals that constitute them. In late 1953, he established the Doxiadis office, a small private firm which expanded rapidly, and from 1963 on, it was renamed Doxiadis Associates. At its peak, it had branches on five continents and carried out many urban and regional planning and architectural studies in 40 countries throughout the world on the basis of its founder's theory of acoustics. The fastest thinking and most decisive man of the world, as he was described by his close associate, Panagis Psomopoulos, Doxiadis had the ability to organize his ideas with clarity and logic, to translate feelings, intuition, and information into business terms on every scale, and to discover the most efficient ways to apply them. Here we see D, down, working in his headquarters with Tombazis, who was his assistant then in the 70s, and who was to become a celebrity from the 70s on. The key to the success of Doxiadis Associates was the great weight its founder attached to the cultural, geographic, and social conditions of each place. This is why he spent a great deal of time and money hiring staff for his office who were acquainted with those conditions firsthand. The morphological plainness and monotony of many projects executed by Doxiadis Associates stem from the two basic principles of its founder: his faith in the universality of form and his view that buildings and settlements must not be absolutely pre-designed or completed so as to encourage people to be self-activated. The projects of Doxiadis Associates cover the entire range of acoustic development in a variety of sectors and magnitudes, from single-family homes to a city of a million people. The selection of major projects that follows will give you an idea of the work of Doxiadis Associates in the developing world, the United States, and in Greece. I have to thank the Doxiadis Archives for the material they provided me for this lecture. The Doxiadis Associates worked in the developing world in the context of the technical and economic assistance provided by the United Nations and by World Bank for the national settlement programs of countries that had gained their independence after World War II. Here are some photographs from the journals that Doxiadis kept while traveling in India in 1954. We see him here, up here. This is the housing program of Baghdad, one of the largest development and housing programs in the world during the 1950s. We see the master plan and period photographs. He used in all these projects low-technology building methods and labor-intensive methods because labor was very cheap. And as you said, and here are some more drawings and models of the Baghdad project. The first large-scale implementation of this theory of acoustics, the Dinapolis idea and his Entopian contextual architecture, which was partly inspired by the hippodamine plans of Hellenistic cities such as Priene and particularly by Miletus, which had 50,000 inhabitants in classical times, was Islamabad, the new capital of Pakistan, designed from 1959 until approximately 1970 and built. Here you see the urban sector neighborhood of about 2,000 by 2,000 meters with pedestrian roads. And here is Doxiadis presenting his project to the Pakistani officials of Ayub Khan's military regime. And here is three very characteristic photographs about the planning, the toil, and the result. And as I told you, you see how he took advantage of labor, used labor-intensive methods, low capital investment, and traditional building techniques. Some more period photographs of the Islamabad capital and the master plan, where he divided the Islamabad into 8 zones, the diplomatic enclave, the commercial district, the educational sector, the industrial area, and so on. Each of these areas having its own shopping main area and planned for 1 million people. Now the last data is that in 1998 the population rose to 800,000 people. A complex of buildings for the University of Punjab, Lahore, Pakistan, 1959 to 1973. Urban development project in Tema, Ghana, 1961 to 1973. We see some of its drawings, period photographs, and plans. The cathedral in Aksum, Ethiopia, 1960s. The model, up, and the result. Down. Doxiadis Associates in the United States of America. I show you the redevelopment project of Cincinnati, Ohio, 1960 to 1962. Newtown, Eastwick, Pennsylvania, 1961 to 1962, one of the largest redevelopment and housing projects to that date. The infrastructure was planned to house 40,000 people. Model for the Louisville Riverfront project, approximately 1962 below, and the administrative center in Malden, here, which was built in 2 phases. The An executed urban plan for the city of Detroit and its greater region in 1965. It was a plan by Doxiadis Associates in collaboration with Wayne State University. It was one of the first attempts in the world to study alternative development models of complex systems in order to make decisions without a prior arbitrary elimination of important variables. Doxiadis Associates and Wayne State University again proposed the urban renewal of downtown Miami in 1966, and they carried on a research program for developing megalopolis of the Great Lakes region. It was also the Washington plan, but I didn't have any material to show it to you today. Doxiadis Associates in Greece, his headquarters in Athens, built in 1955 to 1961, the Beton Brut building with its spacious landscaped patio is a genuine expression of Le Corbusier's post-war architectural approach, and it had one of the richest technical libraries in Greece. That's his family apartment in Athens in the early 60s, and general view of this living room here. The Hellenic National Research Foundation in Athens, 1961 to 1962, which is a very characteristic example of this positivist approach to architecture. We see here the sketches of the final solution to the functional and volumetric aspects of the building, selected by a comparison of alternative proposals, which was a very characteristic method of how this architecture. And here's his general view of the building, again a period photograph. The Aspras Pitio White House settlement designed by Doxiadis Associates and built from 61 to 65 met the housing needs of the workers and lower management of the company Aluminium of Greece. The plan originally included the construction of 1,100 houses that would gradually house a population of 5,000 people, which was a population of approximately the ancient Greek city. A characteristic expression of this approach to Greekness, based on a synthesis of modern planning principles and inspirations from ancient Greek settlements, Priene, Olynthos, etc., and from Greek traditional architecture. Master plan for major Athens area, a national master plan for and program for Greece. They were carried on from 72 to 81. They were both unexecuted, but they influenced very much regional and town planning in Greece. And the last example is the Apollonian settlement at Porto Rafti. Envisioned by Dee in 1969-1970 as a cultural village for artists and thinkers, which finally developed into a wonderful resort community for wealthy Athenians. They are all period photographs and master plan. And the Apollonian settlement in Porto Rafti again, also with period photographs. Doxiadis formulated his ideas and visions of the future of human settlements with clarity and directness in both written and oral form. His writings include a multitude of articles and journals at home and abroad, and 28 books, of which just 8 were written in Greek. He was also an exceptional speaker and teacher. Between 58 and 71, he gave countless lectures on his acoustic theory and taught as a visiting professor at many universities in the United States, Yale, Harvard, MIT, etc., and at Oxford and Dublin. Doxiadis was honored for his work and his multifaceted activities with the highest national and international awards. He was also awarded honorary doctorates by 12 universities abroad. Konstantinidis, I won't insist very much because Yorgos Panetsos showed you his work, so I'll be very fast showing his work. Konstantinidis was an architect with a capital A, well able to integrate theory with practice, and who worked only in Greece. However, his true contemporary architecture, with this essentially anonymous ethos, has a more than local and historic value. This applies also to his architectural philosophy, and I would like to start again with some introductory remarks which hold a key to understanding his approach and work. Konstantinidis was contemplative, persevering, inspired by reality, tradition, and nature in a poetic way. He had a strong artistic flair, rebellious nature, natural propensity for drawing and building things with his own hands. He was self-assertive, egocentric, and critical. Acquainted with significant contemporary Greek painters, sculptors, and poets, including Demandopoulos, Tsaruchis, Morales, Elitis, etc. A man with integrity, a sense of mission, and cultural sensitivity, his passionate search for true contemporary architecture suggests a longing for a stable world and hence a skeptical attitude to change. He worked alone and occasionally headed architectural departments in state agencies, where he allowed his subordinates a great deal of freedom. He was creatively influenced by anonymous architecture, by architects of the modern movement and Frank Lloyd Wright, as well as by great poets and philosophers of antiquity and of the modern times. The maxim of the ancient Greek poet Pindar, "Learn what you are and be such," was one of his favorite mottos. Konstantinidis was born in 1913 in Athens. His father, Dimitris, a medium management bank employee and music lover from Cyprus, offered his three children, and especially his son, educational opportunities far beyond his means. The architect's mother, Marika Andrianidis, came from a middle-class patriarchal family from the provincial town of Corinth in the Peloponnese. Here is his parents, the physician who was his grandfather, his mother's father, and his grandparents. Konstantinidis studied architecture at the Technical University of Munich from 31 to 36. During the first 3 years of his studies, the new faculty members, Adolf Abel and especially Robert Vorhoelzer, tried to open the syllabus to modern ideas, a trend that was forcibly brought to an end in 1933 by National Socialism. Here is a case, Professor Abel, and here is a representative work by Abel, the cultural exhibition of Cologne. Unsatisfied with his academic training, Konstantinidis read and traveled extensively, often by bicycle, in Germany, France, Belgium, Holland, Italy, Austria, and Hungary. Through this self-teaching process, he came into direct contact with avant-garde European architecture, such as the Weissenhof Siedlung, and managed to meet Miss van der Rohe, and other modern masters. Konstantinidis worked both as a civil servant and as a freelance architect. His vicissitudinous career started in 1936 and ended in 1978. As a civil servant, he would serve in 10 posts in four different public agencies. During those years, he would interrupt his civil service career twice, in 1937 to do his military service, and in 1940 to serve on the Albanian front against the fascists. And he would resign twice, in 1957 and 1967. One of his two first buildings of the late 30s is incompatible with the rest of his work. The monumental porch of the first cemetery of Athens, designed in collaboration with Andreas Ploumistos, head of the city planning department, where he was then employed, bears a marked resemblance to Abel's public architecture in Munich. Konstantinidis disavowed this youthful mistake, whereas his critics overrated its importance. On the contrary, the Weekend House in Elefsis, designed in 1938, is his first important work as a freelance architect. Konstantinidis' well-bred instinct made him turn away from the opposing courses of Greek interwar architecture, namely the formalistic alignment with mainstream or avant-garde developments abroad and its parochial regionalism or fake populism. This would bring me often into conflict with clients and the academic community. The architecturally inactive period of the 40s offered him the opportunity to pursue a lonely but fruitful process of self-knowledge in quest of a true contemporary architecture. Wandering extensively throughout Greece with his inseparable camera and text and sketchbook, he discovered the archaic simplicity, serenity, and artistic wisdom of vernacular architecture, both traditional and contemporary, as well as the harmonious and the harmony and spirituality of the Greek landscape. Here you see some sketches from the journal that Kosaninis kept as an officer on the Albanian front. They are rural houses. In old Athenian houses and in the Asia Minor refugee settlements of the 20s and 30s, the contemplative eye of Konstantinidis would recognize the artistic wisdom of true Greek architecture, whose indoor, semi-outdoor, and open spaces were most appropriate for the country's mild climate. As a matter of fact, Konstantinidis grew up in a modest Athenian house on 2 Carolus Street in Metaxourion. Here we see him in the courtyard of his, in the yard of his house, with puppeteers, father and son, Spatharis. Straw huts and offhand cafes and sheds in Attica and on the island of Salamis, photographed and sketches by Konstantinidis, which constitute characteristic products of his self-teaching process. Unauthorized houses of refugee settlements of Greeks from Asia Minor, photographs, sketch, color studies, again, sketches. Offhand cafe in Lycoporia, greengrocer's shed in Piraeus, and chapels on the island of Mykonos. All that again in this self-educating process. We see Konstantinidis here in front of a sketch of his inspired by a refugee house in Kokinia. So through this self-teaching process, he would observe that the anonymous vessels of life, such as a straw hut in Vraona or the chapel in Mykonos, are essentially the same thing as ancient Greek constructions like the treasuries in Delphi, the palace in Tiryns, or a prostyle temple. All this is now very ordinary, but at that time it was groundbreaking. Konstantinidis' quest for a true contemporary architecture was influenced by his favorite poet, Dionysios Solomos, who addressed common and essential matters with thoughts and dreams. His belief in the value of true architecture, contemporary as well as old, is also indebted to German thinkers such as the romantic poet Friedrich Schiller, who believed in the ageless worth of the genuinely popular, and the aphorism of the scientist Georg Christoph Lichtenberg, who maintained, "That which is new is seldom true. That which is true is seldom new." Konstantinidis expressed his view as follows. "Beyond the incidental symptoms of an era, true architecture registers in its whole being certain basic and internal values and truths that are often common to many countries. This gives it an international identity and existence and value, since people everywhere on earth have the same dreams, the same bonds, the same loves, one and the same humanity." Konstantinidis' architectural approach embraced some enduring values of its epoch and place. It enclosed the essentially constructive, social, functional, iconoclast, and anti-historical spirit of the modern movement. By maintaining that buildings must grow out of the earth like trees and flowers, he shared Frank Lloyd Wright's position that true architecture is fundamentally geographical. He also carried on the genuine values of his country's architectural tradition, characterized by a synthesis of indoor, semi-outdoor, and open spaces. These values are simplicity in layout, honesty and discipline in construction, and harmonious relationship with nature. Thus, Konstantinidis built in the same spirit, but not in an imitative manner, his vessels for life with the appropriate modern technique and materials for each site, and with a personal view of the possibilities of his art and of reality. His moral and aesthetic approach echoes Plato's theory of forms and middle period moral psychology. Konstantinidis maintained that searching for perfection and genuine truths in architecture leads to a type or a rule, in the traditional sense of the word, that does not exclude creativity and variety, contrary to modern standardization, which leads to an impersonal uniformity. Hence, he conceived the structural and functional grid, which could yield buildings for several uses, as well as building types for houses, museums, hotels, and other dwellings. To that end, the individual building could be constructed either with stone walls bearing at given intervals a flat roof, or with columns of a reinforced concrete frame supporting the slabs that shelter a structure. The load-bearing and the infill elements of structure are clearly demonstrated. Konstantinidis's constructional position and strongly articulated arrangement of space are softened by a musical sense of form, a brilliant instinct for sighting houses in a landscape, an artistic application of common materials, and a structurally relevant use of the earthy colors of the ancient Greek painter Polygnotus, which were terracotta red, ochre, black, indigo blue, and sky blue. Occasionally, of course, he also used white. He was a fervent opponent of neoclassicism, historicism, and eclecticism, which he considered as the fake tradition of Greek urban architecture. In his opinion, the architect should work both as a skilled craftsman and as a poet who lays hold of reality, gets rid of what is useless, and exercises his regulatory art, which has cultivated with patience, love, and faith. Throughout his career, he consistently supported the architect's leading role in building, comparing him to an orchestra conductor. He often invoked the ancient Greek philosopher Aristotle, who postulated that a work of creative art has its efficient cause in the maker, not in itself or in its user. This is very contrary to what Greeks believe from nowadays. Without undermining the scientific dimensions of his profession, Konstantinidis argued that architecture becomes an art when necessity unites with chance in harmony. His belief that a true architect should be employed by life, not by individuals or corporate bodies, reminds us of influential viewpoints on ethics and aesthetics, such as Riegel's idea of Kunstwollen, which could be translated as will to art, or Schopenhauer's opinion that the will to life and creativity has ontological primacy over the intellect. His mature work was creatively influenced by top figures of modern architecture, such as Adolf Loos, Frank Lloyd Wright, Auguste Perret, Le Corbusier, Walter Gropius, Mies van der Rohe, Rudolf Schindler, Richard Neutra, and Egon Eiermann, among others. He often expressed himself in favor of several of the works and writings. Konstantinidis married to the sculptress Natalia Mela, scion of an historical Athenian family, helped him to become known in influential circles. The bulk of his buildings was produced in the 50s and in the 60s. Here we see him photographed at the building site with his wife in the 1951 in their house and later on. So in his 2-year service at the low-income housing organization and his 10-year service at the Hellenic Tourist Organization as head of the design sections of these two organizations, he produced 31 buildings, which was the majority of his built work. He was less fortunate in his private practice, which started in 1938 and ended untimely in 1975, yielding only 16 buildings, mostly one-family houses. This is due to his unwillingness to be trendy and to compromise with what he called the whims of his clients. The selection of buildings that follows will give you an idea of his post-war work as a civil servant and as a freelance architect. I won't insist very much because you have already seen quite a number of them. Post-war work as a civil servant includes low-income housing, museums, and tourist facilities. This is the wooden model manifesto of his essentially constructive architecture, made on the occasion of his last retrospective exhibition at the Athens National Gallery. The Hellenic Tourist Organization pavilion, which is also sort of a manifesto of his architecture, 1959. Low-income housing in Greece. You see the variety of his solutions. That's in Serres, Macedonia. That's in Nea Philadelphia, Attica. And that's Heraklion, Crete. You see how he uses the Polygnotian colors. Of course, they're not Polygnotian here. They are old slides, and the color has faded out. Here we see from 1957 to 1967, he produced his most important work, which are the Xenia hotels and motels he designed. You see here his standardization, which is not exactly the standardization of industrial standardization. And here some detailed drawings for the sheds, for the individual rooms, and even for furniture. These here are dressing rooms and guest quarters in Epidaurus, very close to the ancient theater of Epidaurus. The Xenia Hotel in Mykonos, harmoniously integrating to its natural surroundings and inspired by tradition. You see the traditional dry stone walls enclosing yards on the island of Mykonos, which influenced him. The Hotel Xenia in Kalabaka, 1960. The Society of Greek Architects is trying to protect this building. I don't know if they will succeed. Motel Xenia Paliouri in 1962, Northern Greece, Chalkidiki. Hotel Xenia in Poros, which is totally disfigured, cannot recognize it today. And one of his most important buildings, it's the Archaeological Museum of Ioannina, 1965 to 1966, where ingeniously planned, covered, the semi-covered and outdoor space. So, Konstantinidis was not comfortable with building in an urban environment. The modern apartment and office buildings he designed on the city block basis were conceived as independent objects and occasionally clashed with the historicism of the adjacent buildings. This was the Achilles heel of his true contemporary architecture. You see here what he proposed. The building he proposed to replace this historic building. He felt more at ease in the suburban environment where the freestanding building system is applied. His innovative apartment building in the high-income suburb of Philothea, organized around a pleasant atrium, is the only block of flats he ever built. That's the atrium here. And His proposal in the 1957 competition for the landscaping of Syntagma Square in Athens also clashed with the neoclassic tradition of its urban environment. No wonder, therefore, that his true contemporary architecture was ostracized from downtown Athens. Kay's typical structure and functional layout applied with several variations in all his one-family and vacation houses. The house of art critic Sidis in Athens, ingeniously planned in a very difficult plot of land. See? Yeah. A very emblematic building of his, very Doric, is the Weekend House in Anavissos, 1962. 3 years later, the Austrian critic Friedrich Achleitner would remark that Konstantinidis's new constructions appeared as having always been part of the particular landscape. The summer house of his wife, Natalia Mela, on the island of Spetses, which was the summer house of his family. The summer house of two American families, the Wood families, on the island of Spetses, 1966-1967. Those are period photographs. And some more period photographs of the same building. Studio and summer house of his friend, the painter Yanis Morales, on the island of Aegina, 1974-78, and here a characteristic painting of Morales of the 70s. The plans, a perspective drawing, and period photographs of the same house. And finally, the summer house with the model of his sister, Eleni Konstantinidi, on the island of Aegina, 1978. And now I'll conclude. Konstantinidis published all his buildings and projects in a bilingual monograph in 1981. You have a copy outside this hall, but just a few of his brilliant photographs and drawings. From the mid-1970s until his suicide on the 16th of September 1993, a period in which he received virtually no commissions, he devoted himself to what he called his other architectural works, the models of his buildings, his books, articles, and exhibitions. He also expounded his original thoughts on architecture in many books and articles, especially after some of his buildings were demolished or disfigured. From 1967 to 1970, he taught as a visiting professor at the Technical University of Zurich. In 1986, he was elected honorary member of the Munich Academy of Fine Arts, and 4 years later, he was awarded the International Herder Prize. Konstantinidis' concern about current developments in local and world architecture was also manifest in his late writings, such as his diatribe against postmodernism, late modernism, and deconstruction, written in 1987 and published in Greek under the provocative title Sinners and Plagiarists, Architecture Takes Off. In this book, he had the courage to name and severely censure major figures not only in postmodern and late modern architecture, but also their forerunners without sidestepping legendary names like Le Corbusier, Loos, etc. And now a few concluding remarks. Despite the fact that most of the work done by these two men is out of date, their approaches are worth discussing, especially now that history and tradition are back in the limelight. Doxiadis was a man of genius who charted new paths with his theory of acoustics. Some of his ideas were ahead of his time, such as his concept of acoustic scales, his approach to networks, his ecological concerns, and his large-scale national and regional plans. His approach and teamwork were particularly effective in emergency situations, such as constructing settlements in developing countries with undemocratic regimes. On the contrary, the buildings and building complexes designed by him, by his firm, under normal conditions, were usually conventional and lacked architectural quality. And despite the fact that many of his views do not bear close scrutiny today, his ability to think globally and act locally resonates in today's discourse on human settlements. Konstantinidis' buildings and theoretical texts provide a solid basis for treating timeless issues in architecture, such as expressing the spirit of a place, harmonizing buildings with the environment, the concept of building types, and concerns about rules and freedom. His approach and work was vindicated in low-income housing, public buildings, hotels and houses, particularly those located by the sea or in the vicinity of ancient Greek monuments. On the contrary, his vision of a fundamentally new architecture that would constitute a break from past and present practice was a utopian objective in dealing with densely built Greek cities. However, his ability to transcend locality and the spirit of his time is in keeping with today's changing cultural climate. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.